Hi, this is David Noble, and welcome to show two of the EduTalker Education Online Discussion Panel series. With me tonight, we've got Alistair Seaman, who's Programme Director at Grounds for Learning, and we've also got Willie White, who is the Outdoor Education Development Officer at East Ayrshire Council. And the theme of tonight's discussion, which is going to continue till about 9 o'clock this evening, is on out-of-school learning. And if you want to get involved in the discussion, if you want to leave a comment or a question for our two panellists, then you can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk. That's edutalker@hotmail.co.uk. Or if you're on Twitter, you can send an at reply to edutalker. Again, that's edutalker. And you can do that at any point, and as host, I'll pick out some points or queries or questions and put them to our two panellists. We've got a few questions that have been suggested by the education community, including a well-known charter teacher and a former Her Majesty's Inspector, and I'll come on to these questions in a moment just before we get started. But first of all, Alistair, could you just say a little bit more about your involvement in education?
Sure. Hi. Well, I manage Grounds for Learning. We're a Scottish team of a UK organisation called Learning Through Landscapes, and our role is to support schools and nurseries to develop and use their outdoor spaces for all sorts of things. I mean, that would include being more active physically. It would include kind of connecting kids to nature. But increasingly, we're working with schools and nurseries to look at learning, just kind of standard curriculum learning. How can you take your numeracy outside, your literacy outside? How can you make learning more interesting? I guess my main credential is that I spent a lot of time as a school people gazing out the window thinking I wish I could be out there. And I suppose in some ways that's kind of what we're doing is working with teachers and early years practitioners to help develop tools and techniques to get kids outside and to make learning a little bit more interesting.
Okay. And Willie, what about yourself? What's your background and your current involvement in education?
I've been 20 years working for Strathclyde Region and after that East Ayrshire, and my background is originally the residential outdoor education centres in Strathclyde, and then I've worked peripatetically across East Ayrshire as an outdoor service. Had a short spell with the quality improvement team in East Ayrshire with a PE sport active schools remit, and then had a little LTS with a remit for outdoor education, and I'm now back in East Ayrshire with the remit for 3 to 18 outdoor education, supporting schools to try and do it themselves and find funding and overcome the health and safety and get young people outdoors more active and learning better, I suppose.
Thanks very much. Just before we go to the first point, which is on the EduTalker Wiki, that's at edutalker.pbworks.com. And as many listeners will have noticed and maybe visited the website recently, it's got a background to the way that these shows work. But also there's space for people to suggest panellists for future shows and also to suggest areas for discussion. So I'll just rattle through the five points of discussion that we might touch on this evening. First of all, we've got, how can the impact of out-of-school learning best be shown? What will help parents or educators to broaden their perception of what is a useful out-of-school learning experience or opportunity? Point three, how might the sector relate their programmes to the experiences and outcomes in the upper levels of the new curriculum? And then two more recent questions that we may get around to today. In recent visits to schools in Denmark and Finland, it was noted that schools there have been designed with large amounts of informal learning spaces. Would this be helpful to young people to make the transition to better informal learning out of school? And finally, what lessons might be learned from examples such as the Barefoot College in India and Sugata Mitra's Hole in the Wall, Sistema Scotland, which is modelled on Sistema Venezuela? So just to start off with, Alistair, point one there, how can the impact of out-of-school learning best be shown, in your opinion?
I was sort of reflecting on that today, actually, and thinking that the question is almost the wrong way around. I think any educator is going to start by thinking, before they actually start any lesson planning, whether that's indoor or outdoor, what am I trying to achieve here? What's the purpose of this? What's the point of this? What learning outcomes am I looking for in my children? And they're going to be designing the learning intervention, whether it's indoors or outdoors, you know, having sort of worked that out. And so I guess the kind of straightforward answer to that question is that ideally, there'll have been some planning and some thought as to what the intended impacts are. And of course, they can be very varied in your kind of methodology, if you like, the way you evaluate, the way you would look to assess whether there has been impact or not would depend very much on kind of what you had set out to achieve. I can think of a really sort of practical example of a primary teacher who'd been doing Britain as a topic, and her kind of learning objectives were the kids would just kind of understand spatially and geographically how Britain was laid out, what its kind of shape was, and where different places related to one another. And so what she did was she started off by asking kids to draw a map of Britain just from memory on a bit of paper, and not surprisingly there were some pretty off the mark drawings there. She then took the kids outside and they created a scale map of Britain using sand on the grass. And she then had a whole kind of pile of laminated cards, and the lesson basically was that kids would be given a card that represented a town or city in the UK, including their own village, and they would then be asked to kind of go and stand on the map where they thought that place was, and they were kind of scored according to how accurate they were, and they were kind of made quite a fun lesson by quickly changing around and having to move from Cardiff to Inverness to Stornoway or Lerwick, etc., etc. But anyway, what happened then was she took that lesson back inside and she asked the kids then, again later on, to kind of go back and do what they'd done previously, which is to draw on the bit of paper a map of the British Isles, show where 10 main cities were, including the place that they lived. And, you know, very clear evidence of impact, very clear evidence that lesson had a very strong impact on their understanding of Britain and the way it was laid out and where they were in relation to other places. So I guess there are probably as many ways of demonstrating impact as there are individual lessons. But I think that's probably the way to come at it, isn't to wait until you finish your lesson and think, now how am I going to evaluate that? But right at the start to think, what is the point? What am I trying to achieve here? And to design your lesson with that in mind, and probably fairly naturally, if you've gone down that route, your kind of evaluation and impact assessment methods will kind of fall out of that, hopefully.
I'll just recap on the question before Willie comes in. How can the impact of out-of-school learning best be shown? Willie?
I think Alistair's kind of covered it pretty comprehensively. It's much like indoor learning, how do we measure the impact of it? And there's as many different ways as lesson plans, as Alistair says. But the significant thing is we have to be clear before we start about what impact we hope to achieve. I think there's also, traditionally with learning outdoors, been a wealth of celebration around it. There's usually a lot of photographs and a lot of sharing from when you come back to school or back to families, the sort of successes and the achievements that maybe aren't the intended impact, but there's usually a lot of additional impacts that we don't assess often around the learning outdoors. And I think, you know, when I work with teachers, I often start off with asking them to remember a powerful learning experience that they've had at some point somewhere in their life, and often they find it's outdoors. And I think when we look back, because for most of us, our experiences are outdoors, are isolated experiences within a 14 years or longer of passing through school. Those are often the ones that really have a high impact, and we can remember them when we look back. And I think it's worth remembering that although we're maybe setting out for specific outcomes and with specific learning intentions, that the impacts that are around the experience go beyond that in many different dimensions, you know, and there are lots of ways to celebrate that as well as the actual assessed intended learning outcome that we're aiming for. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, how comfortable do you feel that the way the curriculum for excellence is set up and many of us are still in the dark, but the kind of early discussions or the early announcements around the forthcoming national assessment results. Now, how comfortable are you that will be shaped in such a way as to be able to show impact of the certificate of the maximum curriculum for excellence levels?
I'm really sorry. I'm struggling to hear that question.
Yeah.
It was a long one as well, and I struggled. Something about national assessment.
Yeah, I'm wondering about the national assessment results, Willie, and you know, how comfortable are you that that's going to be set up in a way that teachers will be able to measure the outcomes within curriculum for excellence and match up the experiences and be able to report to parents and others on how well the young person has achieved within that outdoor learning experience?
I think I wouldn't want to second guess what might be produced at all. I would just hope that it's broad enough to give us the opportunity, as you say, to reflect the breadth of growth that we're hoping for, particularly in our senior phase, as well as the specific learning intentions that we're trying to teach for as well.
And what about yourself, Alison? Well, you said about it being broad, and certainly the curriculum for Excellence seems to offer great opportunities for outdoor learning. But do you have any concerns that, or what would your feelings be about how the National Assessment Resource should be shaped? Should that also be broad and give teachers great opportunities to assess in ways that, you know, that maybe they can construct, or outdoor centres can make up their own assessments? Or do you feel that there might be kind of nailed down assessments that the banks, you know, might be too narrow in their focus?
I mean, I would put my hands up here and say I'm probably not the best person to comment on that. I'm beginning to get outside my field of expertise, but having had a look through the experiences and outcomes, it's hard to imagine that you're going to have to devise a framework that's going to fit with the sort of comprehensive nature of those and the kind of the way that curriculum flexes are set up, the principles of curriculum design, etc. And it's hard to see how you could do that with a very rigid assessment framework.
Well, I'm certainly out of my comfort zone with the next question, so hopefully you can help to enlighten us on this. So the question two, which was suggested, as I say, by a chartered teacher in the Borders, what will help parents or educators to broaden their perception of what is a useful out-of-school learning experience or opportunity? Willie, could you come in first of all on that?
I think the work I'm doing with teachers and probationers at the moment, I'm encouraging them to look at the new curriculum and to look specifically at broad and deep and progressive outdoor learning experiences. And I think if we start to think about a child's progression through their education career from 3 to 18, and we start to plan in a way that says, well, outdoor learning is powerful, and we would like to have experience of learning outdoors across all our subject areas, and we would like to do it frequently so that they're not just isolated events, but we actually get to take learning from a superficial level to a deeper level by maybe revisiting the same place or going to a similar environment but in a sort of more advanced way. And I think when I ask teachers to think about the outdoor learning that they currently make available to pupils, and then get them to see where are the gaps, which curriculum areas are you not offering experiences in? Because for one child, maybe being physically active outdoors and looking at some kind of health outcome really grabs their attention and motivates them. But for others, it might be an art activity or a science activity or even a maths activity outdoor. And I think to encourage teachers to look at a broad, progressive curriculum with deep experiences has been a really good way of focusing their mind on what are the worthwhile experiences and where are the gaps in our provision that we need to work to improve. I suppose maybe a similar approach might work with parents as well, I don't know.
And have you seen gaps yourself then that are starting to be plugged by the kind of new approach to curriculum design, you know, where there's been gaps in the past that outdoor education is starting to fill?
I think there are clearly gaps there are many gaps here, and I think the experiences that are presently available as a child progresses through from 3 to 18 in Scottish education is a bit of a postcode lottery depending on the school you go to, the teacher you have, the head teacher you have, and the opportunities that are accessible to that school. So there are clearly many gaps that could be filled. I think it's a bit early yet to say that the new curriculum and that teachers are up to speed with embracing it that way and filling those gaps. But I think there's an optimism and an enthusiasm and a creativity I can start to see amongst teachers who start to think, oh, wow, so it's just like a whole new resource we've got to go outdoors, and we could do RME out there, we could take nativity out there, and we could look at personal search outdoors, and you know, they're looking, how can we be creative with this resource that is now on our doorstep that we've not really thought of in that way?
Thanks, Willie. I'll just recap for Alistair. So question two is, what will help parents and educators broaden their perception of what is a useful out-of-school learning experience or opportunity? Alistair.
I'm sort of thinking of broadening in two senses. One, as Willie has said, which is kind of broadening out our understanding of what we can do outdoors. I think traditionally in the minds of a lot of teachers, they can kind of see obvious links to biology, to geography, to PE outdoors, but maybe haven't really thought through how it could contribute towards, you know, other subject areas, literacy, numeracy, languages, sciences, etc. And I think there's just lots of potential there. I think the new experiences and outcomes point the way to that a bit. I think, as Willie says, as the creativity starts to be unleashed, the task for people in our kind of role is to have an eye on where that creativity is happening and to be able to pick it up and pass it on and show it off and show it around. Because I think that's really, certainly for educators, I think that's the key way to broaden their perspective and to influence them is to show them what's working in other places. I think most educators appreciate and enjoy seeing examples of things that seem to work elsewhere that they could perhaps adapt for their own use. So I'm thinking about that broadening it at a subject level. But I think this is maybe a good time to mention the new LTS published guidelines on curriculum for excellence through outdoor learning, which were published a couple of months ago. And I think set a very kind of helpful picture, really, of outdoor learning in all its breadth, not just in terms of subject areas, as we've just been talking about, but I think also in terms of location and geography. And again, perhaps that there's tended to be a bit of an understanding that outdoor learning is what you do in a week in P7 when you go off to a nice residential centre, and that's kind of it. And I think the new guidelines are very helpful in kind of painting a kind of rich tapestry of outdoor learning opportunities from just outside your door in your school grounds, which is where, you know, my own particular interest is, through local parks and woodlands, through your high streets, in your neighbourhood, your local nature reserves, your local woodlands, maybe your residential trips, maybe something even grander, maybe overseas. And again, I think, you know, what the task of folks in our sector to do is to start to kind of populate, if you like, examples, case studies, exemplification of ways that these different spaces can be used for outdoor learning as well, and just to kind of broaden people's understanding of where you can do this. It doesn't necessarily need to be a full week at the other end of Scotland. You know, it could be 20 minutes outside tomorrow and more or less everything in between.
I'll still come back to you in a wee minute just to maybe ask if you get a couple of examples of, you know, kind of new locations for learning that you've come across recently, and also maybe you're seeing if there are any examples out there of literacy, numeracy, or languages lessons that are taking place in the outdoors. But first of all, just to go back to Willie, you're talking there about curriculum for excellence, it's been a kind of whole new resource, whole new opportunities to advance teaching and learning using the outdoors. What kind of problems do you see ahead for your average classroom teacher? I mean, we touched on earlier about health and safety. Is that something that guidelines have come out recently maybe to alleviate teachers' concerns around that? But what other problems are on the horizon to actually make this whole new approach a reality?
I suppose that health and safety is a concern that has always been a concern, and I often wonder if it's actually bureaucracy rather than health and safety. I don't think anybody really disagrees with the idea of being safe and doing a bit of planning for the additional uncertainties of going out with a classroom setting. So most people are okay with that idea. I think what has caused dismay in some quarters is the amount of bureaucracy that people perceive to be able to do the 20 minutes outside tomorrow that Alistair was mentioning there. I think you mentioned guidance. We've actually had the national guidance has been with us now since, I think, 2004 in Scotland, and local authorities all have their own individual guidance as the employer that explains what schools and what teachers should be doing. So the guidance in some way has been with us for a while as far as going outdoors. I think what maybe there is a variation of practice across the country, because we have different chief execs, different directors, different insurers, different safety officers who all interpret things slightly differently. So there is a challenge definitely around health and safety. The other challenge that I'm finding when I'm talking to head teachers is resourcing. And I mentioned creativity earlier and how we use the outdoors to inspire young people, but there's increasingly creativity in schools as to how they find the resources to go the step beyond what they can do themselves and look at partnerships with other providers, whether they're adventurous activities providers or environmental or or a trip abroad or something like that. So there are huge challenges, I think, looming over the next 5 years in local government finances and how that will impact on school budgets, and also how that will impact on senior management teams and the flexibility maybe there to help with the planning and the preparation. So I would say those are the two biggest challenges weighed up against this huge opportunity that we've got in the new curriculum that's wanting us to has unlocked the door and allowed us to go through there. So those are the two biggest ones.
And Alistair, I'm just wondering then if you could sort of exemplify a couple of pieces of good practice that you've come across recently in terms of new locations, in terms of maybe traditional more academic subjects like the languages and literacy and numeracy.
Sure. I guess if we start off maybe at the kind of the earliest stage, quite a lot of teachers now are thinking about just very simple ideas, outdoors with chalk on tarmac for your letters as well as for your numeracy. You know, sort of just scale it up and involve it, make it a little bit more active for kinesthetic learners. So quite a lot of interesting stuff going on. Just using very simple resources. So, you know, no need for a special beautiful space or a wildlife garden or anything. You know, most schools have got access to tarmac and chalk. That's all you need. And then kind of taking it up through different levels. If the school was doing a Viking topic and thinking about how to bring literacy into that, and thinking, well, what about runic writing? And doing that outdoors with sticks, asking children to giving them a runic alphabet and asking them to go and write particular bits of prose using sticks or chalk outside on the ground. I know of a school that's developed a Gaelic trail at the wildlife garden that you can go through and learn a whole bunch of different Gaelic plant names. A French teacher who has developed a wildlife trail through a local woodland in a way just to kind of really help boost up vocabulary. Think about using the supermarket for learning your foreign languages. I mean, how different is it wandering up the aisles, you know, holding lemons and oranges and talking about them in French from kind of sitting in a class trying to kind of get it straight in your head. I think also opportunities to link things like literacy into some of the other forms of more adventurous outdoor activities. So, for example, I was talking to an instructor recently who'd been doing gorge walking, and the intended impact of the gorge walk was to boost children's confidence and to get them working together as a team. And one of the ways of assessing that was to ask the children to write about that experience. And actually, for a lot of kids, it was really quite a deeply part. It was maybe one of the first times they'd really been forced to rely on their peers for their safety. They'd been pushed right outside their comfort zone. Some of them were doing that with their teachers and sharing that experience. And asking them to write about that afterwards was a good way of evidencing that. But actually, the class teacher was commenting on the significant impact that a real experience like that had on the quality of writing. Some of the schools that we work with to help them develop and transform their school grounds kind of take that on as a school project. And we've got kids who've been writing funding bids to funders looking for money for the school grounds. They've been doing press releases when the whole thing is up, so they've been getting the local press in to cover the stories. So in terms of the higher end, actually looking at writing the way we use it in our adult life, you know, the purposes we use it for making a case. A group of people who wrote to the Director of Education about the quality of their outdoor spaces and thought quite long and hard about how they would put that together. And then a group of S4 and 5 girls that we worked with this year who had an opportunity to give a half-hour presentation to their local authority education committee and put that together using an extra medium of film and a PowerPoint presentation and of kind of verbal delivery. So very sort of practical, applied ways of using language in the way that we do in the working life that kind of came out of those outdoor learning experiences.
That's really interesting. I think many classroom teachers, myself included, will be listening again to the recording of this discussion just to pick out a couple of these examples of great practice. I know I certainly will. Well, you just moved on to the next point. I think we've got time maybe just for a couple of points to finish up.
Okay.
On to the question to you, Wally. So how might the sector relate their programmes to the experiences and outcomes of the upper levels of the new curriculum? And I would imagine that this question goes across both the public and the commercial sector.
When you say sector, you mean specialist outdoor providers?
I'm trying to second guess what the person that came up the question would be looking for. I think we're talking about the outdoor education sector, which, as I say, I'm kind of making the assumption that that would be both public and private provision.
Yeah. I think specialist outdoor educators working in a different setting from the school, I think, who would work in partnership with a school to provide experiences. They clearly need to get involved and get a copy of the new curriculum and start to read it and start to look at the opportunities that are in there. It's very important, I think, that we work, going very right back to the very first question, how do we measure impact? We need to be clear when schools work with specialists what the intended impact is. And as Alistair said there, they were obviously clear in that God's walking setting what they were trying to achieve with it. But I think we have been guilty in the past of not being quite so clear, specialist providers, and what we're offering. And sometimes I think it's not been the fault always of the specialist providers. I think sometimes schools have been quite guilty of just going where they've always gone and doing what they've always done, because it's always had a big impact. So we're not clear, we can actually pin down specifically what outcomes we've been trying to deliver. I think there's a huge opportunity with the secondary and in particular senior to look at the skills opportunities and the focus on skills there as part of building the curriculum for. They're surely after all those years of learning knowledge and understanding, and we really need to let young people apply it and to apply it and learn the skills so that when they move into the world that they're going to live in, the world they're going to hopefully work in, they'll be able to take what they've had in school and actually put it into an applied setting. And I think outdoor specialist providers could bring more to the table in that setting, whether it's looking at specific subject areas like maths applied or geography or biology that we've traditionally been good at, or literacy or numeracy. We could do much more to offer specific experiences, I think, to the schools in the senior phase to support them in delivering those specific outcomes in an applied way.
You're mentioning there about the applied skills, and that probably fits in well within the framework of curriculum for excellence and the principles of curriculum design. But really, I'm just wondering to what extent do you think it'll end up providers within the outdoor education sector producing documentation, producing experiences and websites where it's a tick box, it's a matrix of experiences that match up to the curriculum for excellence. Is that something that we can expect? Is that something that you would be happy with, or do we need to go further than a tick box exercise?
I would defend a lot of the specialist providers in that they are in increasingly difficult financial times, as we all are, and often, whether they're trusts or commercial organisations, there are books to be balanced to make the organisation viable. And that puts pressures on people to be as efficient, I suppose, as possible in the local authority, in schools, and in the outside sector as well there. I would hope that the guidance that Alistair mentioned that came from Scottish Government, the Curriculum for Excellence Through Outdoor Learning, was accompanied by a CD from HMIE that set out a kind of framework based on the Higios model, which I was delighted about, because I think that is making a clear statement to outdoor educators, outdoor specialists, that you are providing education if you're working with school children in school time here, and you need to be very professional and engage with the school improvement plan and process in a way that the school does and other education and community learning development, etc. does as well. So I would hope it wouldn't be a superficial, ticky-boxy website approach at all.
That's really interesting, Molly. Thanks. And Alistair, again, I'll just go over the question. How might the sector relate your programmes to the experiences and outcomes in the upper levels of the new curriculum?
I mean, I think that's a very pertinent question. And certainly in our sector, looking at school grounds, we're finding that early years are biting their hand off and kind of doing it all the time. Primaries are interested in doing a lot more of it. Secondaries, the examples are fewer and further between. But where you do see those examples are some very creative ones. So I think what Willie mentioned earlier, the whole vocational agenda, I think that we're seeing some quite creative things happening there with school grounds. So, for example, Inverness High School had 4 football pitches, decided that 3 was plenty, thank you very much, played one up and employed a farm manager. And they now run an organic growing enterprise there at the school. And that's not just about growing the food, but it's about how it's marketed, how it's retailed. The pupils are out on the weekend, hawking it around the various fairs. They keep the books. They run the business, basically. Peebles High, interestingly, entered into a partnership with New Homes, and they're building a house in their school grounds. So the pupils at the upper end are actually, you know, practically putting a house together in their school grounds. And then Bishop Briggs, a nice little enterprise project where the some of the kids, the older kids, designed, built, and now operate a crazy golf course in their break time. So, you know, there was a whole design build element, but also now running that as a little business. And so some nice enterprise links there. I think in terms of just more general curriculum areas, there's some interesting things we've seen. A physics teacher has been doing speed of sound experiments outdoors with flags and car heaters in a very kind of sort of hands-on kind of way. And we're working with a couple of secondary schools at the moment doing some filmmaking so that the pupils are basically making a case for investment in their outdoor spaces. And they're doing that by filming and interviewing parents and teachers and local community members, etc. Some interesting things going on around physics and designing renewable. I mean, I think for Scotland, renewable energy is such a kind of key future area for us. And looking at, you know, not just installing a wee wind turbine, but building one from scratch, looking at solar forms of energy. And then another one that's, I think, tapping into a lot of imaginations is looking at GPS and mapping and Google Earth and blogs and all that sort of stuff. So there's an interesting organisation that normally takes older kids to exotic parts of the world to do environmental projects, but they've adapted that project for secondary schools who just want to look at their own immediate area. And so kids are mapping their local community using GIS, and they're assessing the kind of the quality of the local environment, looking at environmental issues, interviewing the community about that, putting all that together on a blog, taking the case to the local community and trying to get some kind of project going around environmental regeneration. So there really is, it's only our creativity that hampers us, I think. Do you understand that it's harder at upper levels when you're kind of constrained by exams and timetables, but that there are increasingly a number of quite creative ideas out there that folks can adapt for their own situations.
I'm really conscious of the time, but just interested if either of you want to come in at all in the kind of general theme about, you know, the importance, to what extent is it important to have informal learning spaces within schools. And also, and just the fifth point there, it was about looking at, is there anything we can learn in the international context? So, Lily, first of all, do you have any thoughts on the extent and the uses of informal learning spaces, or, you know, have you come across anything in the international sphere?
I think I'll let the informal spaces, I'll let Alistair answer that one. International, the specific example that the caller gave, I don't know that specific example, but I think there's huge opportunities for us to look at. I'm actually phoning from Wales at the moment. I'm sitting in a car park overlooking the Welsh coast. I've been down talking to some English outdoor education advisors, and, you know, there's developments in south of the border that are incredibly similar to where we're at, and the health and safety law is the same. So we can learn a lot from here, but obviously further afield, we've got a lot of people heading across to Norway and the Scandinavian countries to look at their outdoor kindergarten approach, but not just the early years and also primary school in particular. And then I think our relationships with other continents in Africa, we're actually, although we think we're at education is much more advanced than them, there are lots of things we can learn about recycling and about how their schools are set up and how they manage their time and their space, I think, from approaches around the world, yeah, definitely.
And also?
Yes, I think the questioner was probably interested in indoor informal learning spaces. Actually, yesterday I was at a meeting of school estate managers and the Scottish Futures Trust, the guys who are responsible for building new schools we're going to get, and that was certainly a very live theme for them, looking at creating more kind of informal indoor spaces, and that's great. I guess what we would be saying is, do you think also about your outdoor spaces? 80% of your school area is outdoors, and think about Wi-Fi enabling some of that. Think about creating spaces where pupils could sit outdoors for a bit, where a teacher could take a class for a session. Think about how you can get as much learning value out of that space as possible. And then thinking about the kind of again, like, really not familiar with the examples quoted, but the, I think the idea is about, you know, the concept of school as a building, perhaps being a concept that's going to change. Again, at that meeting yesterday, I heard about aspirational thoughts from Dumfries and Galloway, where they're basically looking, as they're thinking about the new school, they're looking at every single council-owned building, and not just council-owned, but churches, community buildings in Dumfries, and saying, you know, we've got all this space here already. We've got unused shops, we've got churches, we've got, you know, council offices with space in. You know, what is a school? Do we, at secondary level, do we actually need a thumping great big building where it all happens in one space? Or actually, in the kind of world that we're educating our children to grow up in, do we need to be kind of moving on from that? And do we need to make Dumfries a learning school so that actually we're using 10 different spaces in different ways there? And obviously all manner of interesting logistical challenges as to how you make it happen. But I was intrigued that that was actually being taken forward by the, you know, not just by a bunch of wacky designers, but by the education director and others down there that are seriously looking at that as an option. And so I think it's, you know, I think there will be increasingly other models and ideas around, you know, what is a school.
Well, and also thank you very much for taking part in this EduTalk discussion. Again, coming back to my role as a, primarily as a classroom practitioner, I found it absolutely fascinating, and I can't wait to listen to the podcast again later on in the week. Thank you very much, and especially to Willie, who's, I think you were saying you're in a service station in Wales somewhere, so it's great that, that both Alison and yourself's mobile batteries have lasted. And I hope the experience was okay for you as well. And thanks very much to Walter Patterson, who's been tweeting away on Twitter all during the conversation, just picking out some highlights from what Lily and Alistair had to say. The recording of this conversation will be available as a podcast at edutalk.cc later on this evening, and will be up there as a permanent record. And I hope you can join me for the third discussion, which takes place in mid-August, and that's going to be around making education relevant for 24/7 learners. And the panel has already taken shape and will include Professor Stephen Heppel, journalist Douglas Blaine, and Pilot High School teacher Ian Stewart. So until next time, thanks very much.